Greetings from Bedford, Massachusetts. This is Eagle Scout 1968, and you are listening to the GeoTalk Podcast.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Keeper of Time for Victoria. We find out a way that you can rate caches on gc.com, and we hear of a story that ended with a police visit. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 50 of GeoTalk, and who would have thought 2.5 years ago we'd reach this milestone? And a big thank you to everyone who supported the podcast over the last 2.5 years, especially to Papa Bear Left in Macquarie, who helped me sort of go along with the very first episode and supported me in putting that together. So thank you very much, Ian, for your support, and everyone else over that period for contributing, for dropping in emails, and helping me get through and put the podcast together. And hopefully we'll put another at least 50 more on the feed for you. Now, apologies for the lateness in getting this out. There's been a few things that have been happening in our life. We've actually moved house, which, as those of you who have done and know, it's probably one of the most traumatic things you can do in your life. But fortunately for us, it all went smoothly. So we're in a new location. We've got a new 10-kilometer radius to try and clear out around us. We didn't succeed with the last one. Let's hope we have better luck this time. There we go. So now we've got a new address to work from, and hopefully the podcast will be coming every 2 or 3 weeks again to you. Now, first of all, a little bit of news. First of all, from a groundspeak, they've brought back the KML file. Now, you might recall a few episodes back I mentioned that groundspeak had switched off this feed. Now, the KML feed, or the KML file, is what works in Google Earth and allows you to view geocaches in Google Earth, and you can sort of, you know, zoom around and in and out and get 3D views and all that sort of thing. Well, they decided a few months back to switch it off because it was too big a drain on resources. Well, just a few weeks ago, they've put it back on because they've acquired a new server. They've done a bit of rejigging to the software, and now it's all back up and operational. So I'll give you a link in the show notes to the forum topic there on Groundspeak's forums, but you can find it on your My Account page if you log into geocaching.com. A quick update on national parks in Australia. First of all, New South Wales, as you're all aware, or if not, you should be aware, since 2002, geocaching has been banned in New South Wales national parks. Now, the Park Service have told us just recently that they've been working through a lot of other legislative issues, but they're going to be start working on the geocaching policy very soon. And hopefully we might hear of some possible changes not too far down the track. Now, meanwhile, north of the Tweed, over in Queensland, the news hasn't been so good. We've been told through a number of geocaches that the Park Service up there have officially banned geocaching now in Queensland, and the rangers, from what we've heard, and this is just anecdotally, we've heard are actually removing geocaches from national parks. They're actively finding them. So a bit of sad news there, and that's to remind for anyone who's heading up to Queensland, that ban is now in place. And also another little bit of, just a tiny bit of sad news, earth caching. If you've been doing earth caching now since it began, and you've been trying to work your way through the Masters program to get those pins, if you didn't get to the bronze or silver level, by now it's too late. They've actually stopped sending out pins for those two levels. They're only sending them out now for gold and platinum. And that began on the 1st of August. Now, they have said that anyone who reaches the bronze or silver, they will get an icon in which they can put on their My Profile page. But anyway, that's a few changes that have happened in earth caching over the last few months. Now, one way to keep up to date with geocaching in Australia is to visit the Geocaching Australia forums, and you can register and find out about those at forum.geocaching.com.au. And if you haven't already, sign up for an account. And whether you participate or just read through them, you can pick up a lot of tips and information about what's happening in geocaching in Australia. Now, there was an interesting one that popped up just a week or two ago from the Freaks down in Mornington Peninsula down in Victoria. And the topic was titled, "An Afternoon Caching Ends with Police Questioning." Now, they write, "Had a few hours to spare this afternoon, so went caching on the Mornington Peninsula with my four-year-old daughter. Grabbed Dam Spam GC1FEC8 at Mount Martha at 2:15 in the afternoon on our way to Arthur's Seat to knock off some of the others off my local unfound list. Now, while leaving the last cache for the day, my wife rang me at 5 p.m. to ask how far away I was, as the police were at home and wanting to talk to me, but she didn't know what it was all about. I arrived home 20 minutes later to find the police had left but were returning to talk to me about an alleged assault in the Mount Martha area, and my registration number had been reported to them. They returned to ask me about my movements in the Mount Martha area and what I was doing there. I explained that I had parked my car in a car park and crossed the road with my daughter, holding hands, and walked off into the bush to find a geocache. I then returned to my car 20 minutes later, daughter on shoulders, and drove to Arthur's Seat. Now, it turns out someone had reported a suspicious man walking off into the bush with a young girl in tow. The police asked to speak to my daughter to make sure she was okay. When they asked her what she'd been doing today, she said excitedly, 'Treasure hunting with Dad.' Case closed." Well, it's quite an interesting story, and I suppose it's one that's not surprising. And I know we've heard stories of people who have been questioned by police and also, you know, of bomb scares and so forth. But and I know that I've said in the podcast before about how I don't like and try to avoid finding playground caches, but I think this is the first time that I've heard of actually someone being called in to the police because they're with their kids going off into the bush. And you know, there's a whole lot of things that I suppose you could speculate and comment on. And certainly if you go to the forums, you can see some of the comments that have been made there. One interesting thing is that Caught at Work, who's appeared on this podcast in the past, has actually uploaded a YouTube video. And I'll give you a link to that in the show notes, where you can see some security camera footage of Caught at Work finding a cache. And then having to return to it a few minutes later with the police, who obviously wanted to know what was going on. So, yeah, it looks just a reminder to everyone that, you know, this is sort of, I suppose, for many people, an unknown activity. And if you're out finding geocaches and, you know, you find out that you have been seen, you might need to let people know exactly what you're doing, or maybe just have to be a bit more secret squirrel about it all. Anyway, if you've got some similar stories where you've had encounters with the authorities, whether it's because you know, someone thought you're doing something unusual, or you found something in a suspicious place or something like that, why not drop us an email or give us a phone call on the GeoTalk hotline. Well, it's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode. And the question is, which month did the most number of geocaches start geocaching? Now, I don't mean month of the year, but I mean actual month, since May 2000 when the activity began. So which month did the most geocaches start caching in Australia? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, now we're heading down to Victoria, and we're heading down to a lovely part of the state, a town called Woodend, which is near my hometown of Melton. We're going to catch up with Keith, also known as Keeper of Time. Welcome to GeoTalk.
Thank you, Dara.
Now, first of all, tell us a little bit about your geocaching adventures. How did you first start getting into it?
I got into geocaching in late 2005, and I have to thank my daughter, Helen, for basically getting me into it. For the previous 10-odd years, during her teen years, I'd spent most of my time of the weekend running her around, guitar lessons, swimming lessons, etc. And when she finally decided to bite the bullet and move out with some friends, I sort of found myself with a lot of spare time of the weekend. So I was actually looking for a pastime or a hobby, something to keep an interest and stop me from becoming too much of a couch potato. Being a bit of a techo head as I am, I like to watch technology-based programs on the television. And at the time, on pay TV, there was a program called Call for Help. And there was a guy there called Leo Laporte, who did a presentation on GPS technology and handheld GPS receivers. And in that article, he actually mentions geocaching. And I'd never owned a GPS, but often wondered what you could actually do with one. So I decided to do the usual thing and Google it, and read all the sections on geocaching and thought what a good idea it would be. So I went out and splashed out on a Garmin and went out to find a geocache.
So tell us about your first find.
Well, my first find actually took a little bit longer than I would have liked. I actually tried for 3 caches before I actually found my fourth. The first 3 were all DNS, which I didn't like. My first one was in Gisborne. It was in the Woodend State Forest. I did it on my own, and it was a very nerve-wracking experience because having tried 3 before, I was actually starting to get to the point where I was almost thinking that geocaching was just like this big con that everybody else realized, but not me, and I'm there in the middle of this large section of the Wombat State Forest, frankly trying to find what was supposed to be a fairly large container. And I'm 50 metres into the thick before I actually come across it, so I was actually quite pleased to actually realise that people really were hiding these things out there for other people to find.
Now, you've got an interesting screen name, Keeper of Time. Suggests you've got something to do with timepieces or chronology?
Sort of, yes. When I started geocaching, I realised you had to pick a name for yourself. My work of the last 15 years has been with a multinational engineering company as an administrator. And I actually administer the back-end systems for them. And the main piece of software that I manage for them is their timesheeting system. Being an engineering company, what they sell is time. So for the past 15 years, I've had various names within the company, nicknames to do with time, timekeeper, keeper of time, time lord, etc. So when I took up geocaching, I thought I'd base it around that. And fortunately, I actually was going to call myself Time Lord when I first started, but that name had already been chosen. So I decided to go for Keeper of Time, which I'm glad about because I had the feeling that Time Lord was actually a little bit too pretentious for me. So I actually enjoy Keeper of Time.
It's got a ring of Doctor Who, Time Lord, hasn't it?
Yes. Bit too much, bit too sci-fi for my liking, but there you go.
Now, you've kind of run with that theme. Pretty much all of your caches have the theme time in them, don't they?
Yes, all my GC caches, the title has got either the word time or some inclination to time in them. After now placing about 26 caches, I'm actually starting to run out of inspiration. I frankly Google time to try to come up with other words for it. So I've got one fairly close to your hometown called Merry Minute. So again, it's the minute part is the reference to time.
Right. And do the caches themselves, you know, contain items that relate to time?
When I first put them out, they would inevitably have various forms of timepieces in them. I tried to fill them with the sort of kiddie's toy. They're real watches, but they're the cheaper end of the watch. I just couldn't afford it otherwise. And I know that there are a lot of local caches who go out with kids, and the kids really like to look for them. So I tried to make sure that when I first put them out, they're reasonably well stocked with some nice things that the kids can look at.
Mm. Okay, so tell us a bit about what you like when it comes to geocaching. Are you an urban finder, or do you like getting out into the bush a bit more?
Myself, my wife, Joel, certainly prefer the more bush-based caches. Neither of us are particularly fit and go for particularly long hikes, but we still like the country-based caches where you've got a bit of a walk, even if it's up a decent hill. We're getting on in life now, but we can still manage most of them, and we certainly enjoy the country-based ones. The city ones are nice, and we're doing more of those now as winter comes on. With the cold weather, it's nicer to be closer to some of the shopping centres where you can just disappear into and grab the odd latte, etc. But during the summer, we really enjoy the country caches.
Mm-hmm. Is there a cache that's quite memorable for you?
Memorable caches? There's been a number of memorable caches. couple ones that I did fairly recently come to mind. The one was put out by Court at Work. It was a GC cache. We don't get too many GCA caches put out these days, so it's always nice to find a good one that Court at Work had put out. It was called by, I think it's called That's a Big Un. Again, it was out in the Wombat State Forest. Having just bought a four-wheel drive, it was nice to test it out down some of the tracks down there. And actually, from memory, it was my 799th cache. And when I got there, I realized why it was called It's a Big Un, because it was a 15-liter. Cache, and much to my amazement, it was actually inside an ammo can. I didn't realize that they made ammo cans that big. They obviously have to have large arms in something, and he managed to go out and buy a 15-liter ammo can. So that was a nice one. But my 800th cache, which was my last milestone, was a reasonably memorable one. It's fairly local to where I'm up in the top of Mount Macedon. It's at a peak called Mount Charlie. So the cache was put out by Sam Carter. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the name of it, but the GC code is GC1TWAW. And I won't give too much away, but suffice to say that it was a very steep hike for about a kilometre and a half to get to the peak. And having found what I thought was the cache and did a bit of celebration and sat down and had a nibble of something to eat, and then put the cache back. I was rather confused as to why there was nothing in the cache. It was just an empty box. So I was concerned as to why there was nothing to log. But I merrily crunched back out, back down the time trails, and I was about one third of the way back down the hill when I met a fellow geocacher coming up. His name was Rudell. So I chatted to him about it, and he then seemed to indicate that I hadn't actually found the cache. I'd found the start of a multi-cache. So I then had to turn around and go off with him and re-find the cache to work out where the coordinates were and continue on around. And it was probably an hour and a half later before I actually found the cache. So it was a little bit long before I found my 800th. And Riddell was very generous in handing me the logbook first so I could claim the first to find on it as well.
Mm-hmm. What's been the best aspect of geocaching for you? I mean, do you enjoy the going out or the getting together with others or some other facet of it?
I certainly enjoy getting out. If it wasn't for geocaching, I'd probably end up sitting around on a Saturday and a Sunday not doing a great deal myself, so it certainly gets my out. It's an activity that myself and Jill both enjoy. We are now actively trying to get my daughter and her partner involved, so we may have some geo children to be able to lay claim to. And it's certainly, for us, more a case of getting out there and being taken to some very nice parts of Victoria. And as we slow down in life, hopefully we may be able to spend a little bit of time around some of the other states, finding all of the geocaches.
Now, you mentioned that your last milestone was 800, so obviously you're nearing up to that 1,000, the Magic Kilo Club. You got any sort of plans for how you might celebrate that and how long you think it might take for you to get there?
It's not something I'm overly concentrating on. I'm not a particularly numbers-orientated person. It is nice to see them ticking over, and yes, I am certainly looking forward to getting to the 1,000. When will I do it? I'm not too sure. I'd like to think I'd do it this side of Christmas, but with winter around and what have you, you tend to not find so many as you normally would. I'd like to try and make it something special. The obvious one in Victoria is Melbourne's First, which is not too far away from me, and I've deliberately not been in that area, so I don't have to find it. So that's the one I may decide to pick as my 1,000th, but we'll have to wait until we get a little bit closer and I can certainly look around and see if there are any others that are just as memorable.
Well, thanks very much for that, Keith. You've given us a great insight into what you do geocaching, and I wish you all the best in reaching 1,000 whenever you do, and all the best in your geocaching adventures. Thanks for joining us on GeoTalk.
Many thanks, Darren.
And a big thank you to Keeper of Time for that interview. And it actually turned out a week later, Renee, Zach and I travelled down to Melton for a family get-together, and we managed to catch up with Keeper of Time and have a cup of coffee and share a bit of talk about geocaching. And he handed over to me three wonderful little prizes to give away on the podcast. Now, they're the tiny little watches or clocks that he was talking about, and they come in different shapes, and you can check a photo of them out on the GeoTalk website at geotalkpodcast.com. And we're going to give them away during the month of August. Now, to win one of these, all you have to do is send us in a story about geocaching and time. Now, it can be something like, you know, the best time that you had geocaching, or it could be when is the right time to go geocaching. But send us a little story in. You can either send it via email or you can ring it in on 02800 50 436. And you have to do it before the end of August, so before the 31st of August. And we'll play or read out our favourites in the month of September, and we'll give a prize to the three best ones. So check out that competition and check out the watches. And thanks very much to Keeper of Time for donating those prizes. As we mentioned last episode, we're always on the lookout for audio to include on the GeoTalk podcast because it's all about you, the Australian geocacher. And we got a call now from HGL while he was geocaching in South Africa. Here's a tip for anyone who's planning on caching overseas.
Hi, Darren and GeoTalk listeners. It's HGL here, normally based in Adelaide, but today I'm calling from South Africa. Got a tip for anyone wanting to geocache overseas, especially in places like Johannesburg where it's not safe to do it alone. I popped the message up on the Groundspeak forums, and within a couple of days I had the local South African cachers wanting to take me out and do an adventure, and thanks to Bruce TP, managed to find 15 caches in Johannesburg and also passed my 50 cache milestone, so that's fantastic. So a big thank you to Bruce TP and the gang in South Africa. I've had a fantastic day. Sorry I wasn't able to help the Mr. Grumpy TP along on its adventures. Cape Town's just a little bit too far away. So keep up the excellent work, and thanks very much.
Well, thanks very much, HDL, for that tip. And don't forget, if you've got one of your own, why not give us a call on 02800 50 GEO. That's 800 50 436. And if we play your tip or your cheerio or milestone, as you'll hear later on, you'll go into the draw each month to win a prize from geocachestore.com.au. And we'll announce the winner of the July prize at the end of the podcast. Well, now it's time to have a look at some of the events occurring around the country during the month of August. And on the 15th of August will be the Nambour social event being held by Delta Foxtrot 2, and that's up there in Queensland. On the 26th of August is another pub lunch at the Marble Bar by Barra. That'll be in Adelaide in South Australia. And on the 28th of August is Let's Raid the Food Bowl by PPRAS. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. I think that's PPRAS. That'll be held in Mildura up in the Mallee region of Victoria up in the northwestern corner. Now, we've also got another one called in from Team Fudley, and they've got an event occurring on GCA. So here's Team Fudley.
Hi, I'm Xanthia from Team Fudley. I just wanted to let you all know about an upcoming event that my dad is hosting called the 2009 Cyber Flash Mob Event. Check it out at GA1527 on GCA. Hope to see you all there. Bye.
Well, for many years now on different forums, a lot of geocachers have asked if there's any way in which to rate geocachers. according to whether they enjoyed them or didn't enjoy them. Now, those of you who have used geocaching.com.au will know that certainly for caches that are listed on that particular website, there is the ability to give it a rating out of 5. But it's never really been easy to do on geocaching.com. Now, I've actually received 2 separate emails on this. Most recently, I got an email from Steve, who's from K&K from Bavaria over in Germany. And he highlighted this to me, but also an old friend of mine who I used to geocache with here in Australia, who's returned back to Germany as well, Alpini, also dropped me an email a few weeks earlier, and he's been involved in this particular project. Now, it's called GeoVote or GC Vote, and he says the idea obviously is well known that in Australia we're able to use geocaching.com.au. However, this rating system doesn't translate across to geocaching.com. And what the developers have done is been able to create an overlay that sits on top of geocaching.com to help you rate them. Now, what this does, it's a fairly simple but smart tool, he says, and what you can do is rate caches within seconds. In fact, he says that he did his last 30 in a little under 2 minutes, and so it's very, very easy to use. Now, the GC Vote script has been written by someone by the name of Guido Wagner, I think it is, who's a German geocacher, and he's put a lot of effort into it, and there's been a lot of people over in Germany who have contributed to this project. Now, what you need to run the script is you'll need to use the Firefox browser, because at the moment Internet Explorer doesn't work for this, neither does Safari, but they are looking at those. You'll also need the Grease Monkey plugin. Now, I'll give you a link in the show notes on where to get that, but you can always do a search in your search engine to find out where you can get the Grease Monkey plugin. And then you'll need the GC Vote script for Grease Monkey. And I'll give you a link in the show notes as well on that one. And those show notes can be found at geotalkpodcast.com. Now, once you've loaded all those up, it's fairly simple. It's quite easy. So you install Grease Monkey into Firefox, and then you'll need to restart Firefox, and then you install the GC Vote script. And then from that point on, whenever the Grease Monkey scripts are switched on, every time you go to geocaching.com, whenever there is a listing of a geocache, whether it be a list of many of them on one page or whether it's the actual page listing, you will see a third group of stars or an extra group of stars, which is for the rating. It's a very, very useful tool. You'll find that you can also not only rate other people's caches, but you can also have a look at how people are rating your own. Now, it's an opt-in system. Obviously, for those people who don't install these scripts, they won't see the results. And also, the programmers or the developers have said that if you don't want your own caches actually voted upon by other people through this script, you can actually drop them an email and ask for them to be exempt. But look, I think it's a fantastic tool. It's very hard to explain without actually seeing it. So look, if you're interested in rating caches and being able to see which ones are being rated and which ones, you know, are sort of, you know, sorting out the wheat from the chaff, check it out. Go to the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com and download the Grease Monkey script and then download GC Vote. And thanks very much to K&K from Bavaria and from Alpini, both from Germany, for highlighting that particular script. Well, now it's time to listen to some of the milestones that have been called into the GeoTalk hotline over the last few weeks. And we'll kick it off now with Griffo, who's calling in from Queensland.
G'day, Darren. It's Griffo calling from the top of Mount Indrie on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. We've just found our 500th cache with the Green Team 2, and they've found their 700th. We've traveled up from Lismore yesterday from the north coast of New South Wales, and they're good friends of ours. It's taken us 4 years to get this far, and it's taken the Green Team about a year less to get the 700. Anyway, mate, love the show. Thank you very much. Bye.
Hello, GeoTalk listeners. Jeremy here from the ACT, also known as Norkmeister. Just ringing up to give myself a shout-out for 2 milestones I got on the weekend, my 50th cache and my first to find.
Hey, Student Doc, it's HomeDG here. Just want to let you know that I had a really exciting adventure tonight with my mate Rough as Guts, and also an import cacher, Pickadidu, from Malta. He's moved to Australia. Anyway, I cracked 1,150 geophones today on GCA.com and 1,200 for GCA. So I was excited and I thought I'd share it with you. See you, mate. Bye.
Well, congratulations to everyone who reached a milestone, and well done, and we hope to hear from more of you in the near future. If you've got a milestone that you want to ring in for yourself or for one of your geocaching friends, give us a call on 02800 50436, or you can email it in to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Well, it's time now to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag. And the first one comes in from G-Man San, also known as Jerry. He says, "Hey, Spin Doc Bob, just listened to GeoTalk episode 49. We discussed the proper method for travel bugs." And he says, "I agree that the goal should be included with the travel bug. And I've just started using a thing called a travel bug passport that I found online. It's a PDF document that can be printed out and folded and attached to your travel bug to travel with it. And you'll find it on the Texas Geocaches website. And the website for that is www.texasgeocaching.com/cache_docs.asp. And we'll include that link in the show notes. And he says there's a spot in there for being able to write the TB name, the owner's name, the TC code, and a spot for its goals. So check that out. You can download that to attach to your travel bugs. Also, an email from Stealth Ninja Penguin and Nomad Penguin. They say, congratulations on your 50th episode. I'm sure there's a lot of time that you put into it, and there are plenty of people who listen and appreciate your efforts, such as us, and hope to catch up with you one day in Sydney. Well, thanks very much, guys. I hope to hope that you do drop down to Sydney one day, or maybe I might be able to catch up with you and we can go caching together and do a live interview. And finally, I've got a call from Mountain Biker Oz down in the ACT. Now, a couple of months ago, I let go of a GeoTalk GeoCoin to travel around the country, and anyone who picks it up can call in and leave a message. It's got the phone number attached with it, and hopefully more and more people will find it as it travels around the way. But anyway, here's Mountain Biker calling in with the GeoCoin.
This is David, Mountain Biker Oz from Canberra. Okay, so I've got to say why I found this coin and what I like about it. Well, it's a nice coin, but what I like about it was having to go for a mountain bike ride to retrieve it. I like that. Have a good day. See you later. Bye.
Well, that's just about all for GeoTalk in this episode, this 50th one. But before we do, we've got two little bits of housekeeping. First of all, we've got to announce the winner for the July competition, who will win a prize from geostore.com.au. And thanks to Aaron and Zoe for donating the prize in this month, for July. We're giving away a Tracker Bear travel tag, and also an Australia mini or micro geocoin. And the winner from the contributors that contributed to the last two geotalks is Team Fudley. So congratulations to Team Fudley. If you can drop us an email with your contact details, with your address, before the end of August, we'll send out those prizes in the mail to you. And don't forget, anyone who contributes to the podcast and has their audio played or their email read out during the month of August, you'll go into the draw to win a prize from geocachestore.com.au, and check out their store. And they've just started selling GPS devices, so now you've got no excuse not to be able to go geocaching and get just about anything. And finally, we've got to give you the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question. The question was, which month did the most geocachers start caching in Australia? And the answer is January 2009. We had 825 geocachers begin. It was quite a spike in that particular month, because the next most popular month was April 2009 with 664, and October 2008 with 616. And the month that I started, July 2003, just 79 of us started caching. So you can see that activity has certainly grown over the last 10 years. Well, that's all for this episode. In the next episode, we're going to chat to an Aussie who now lives in the US by the name of Aussie Cacher. And we're going to chat to someone from the University of Melbourne about some ways in which they're improving mapping and GPS technology. Until next time, safe geocaching.